From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. COVID-19 shut down North Carolina in March. A cautious reopening plan by state officials has led to a flattening of the case count curve, but the restrictions have also stalled commerce. Economist Mike Walden of NC State writes that the biggest blow to the state's economy happened from February through April. The sectors that took the biggest hits are not a surprise. The leisure hospitality sector lost half of its jobs. Also hard hit personal services, retail, and business services. The sectors that have suffered the least in North Carolina: construction, financial services, and government. And because the Wilmington area thrives on tourism, it is one of the harder hit parts of the state. Just this week, Governor Roy Cooper announced the expansion of Retirement Clearinghouse, a fintech company in Mecklenburg County. He also dropped news that a gene editing company, Beam Therapeutics, would locate in Durham County. Both projects amount to an investment of more than $90 million by the companies and the creation of more than 500 new jobs, according to the governor's office. But what is on tap for the Cape Fear region? And what kinds of strategic decisions by local business owners and policymakers would help or hinder an economic recovery? Joining me now to explore these questions, Adam Jones. He's a regional economist at the Cameron School of Business at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Professor Jones, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us today, Megan Lewis. She's Director of Programs for Cape Fear Collective, a data science nonprofit launched in Wilmington last year. She's also the project manager of a new study of jobs in the region. Megan Lewis, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
And of course, if you have your own questions about the local economy, or you'd like to tell us about some of the challenges your business is facing or concerns you have about your job, are you rethinking your livelihood? Send us an email during the live discussion this Wednesday, August 12th at coastline@whqr.org. Adam Jones, do business owners in this region think they will survive COVID?
That's a tough question. I'm not sure what they think. I think that there's a probability that some of them will fail, but that a lot of them will be able to hold on. So if you look at the southeastern North Carolina area, we all know that we're heavily reliant on leisure and hospitality, retail, and construction employment in the region. Well, leisure and hospitality tends to swing more than the national economy does. So we took a really, really hard hit when the shutdown first happened, but we're now recovering more quickly as things start to ease up a little bit. I think we'll continue to march forward, but I think that that quick recovery is going to slow down in the region, only because if we remain in phase two until September 11th-ish or whatever that date was, that's kind of getting us to the end of tourism season and where we start to rely on the college students to come in and replace the tourist spending.
Megan Lewis of Cape Fear Collective, you've been working on this job study and you've been talking with companies, business owners. What does your data show in terms of the outlook for growth?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Cape Fear Talent Survey, which I know we'll talk about more, surveyed almost 500 employers in the Cape Fear region. And we were actually surprised to see and grateful for that over 55% of them suggested that they would be growing their business in the next 3 years. So, you know, even some cautious optimism, I think, given the pandemic.
Now, was this pre-COVID or during COVID data?
Probably could not be more during COVID. We launched the survey on Friday, March 13th, and the stay-at-home order came that next week. We considered closing the survey, but again, just wanted to kind of take the pulse of local employers, and we're thankful to see that, many and industry varying do plan on growing over the next 3 years.
What were some of the most positive employers? Which sectors would they fall under?
Yeah, so I think professional services. I also saw the public sector all expected growth moving forward. One of the questions that I found most insightful is how confident are you in sourcing that talent here locally? And there are some industries, construction, manufacturing, logistics, that we need to help support their local talent pipeline here.
And we're definitely going to get into ways that people think we can do that. I want to go back to this idea of North Carolina's economy and specifically the Cape Fear region having bottomed out. Adam Jones, do you agree with Professor Walden of NC State on that point, that the hardest hit really came from February to April? You did talk about, you know, we do seem to be recovering. Are we going to take another hit? Or is this really it? Is this kind of the long, slow slog out of it?
So that depends on what happens with the virus. And I'm not an epidemiologist. I have a hard enough time doing economic forecasts, let alone virus forecasting. But I think that hope, when I say I think, that means hope. I hope the worst of it is behind us. And we're now starting our slog out. To follow up on Megan's comments about businesses being optimistic about the future, that's reflected in some of the statewide surveys as well of business expectations, and they've been ticking up. So in April, businesses were fairly pessimistic. They thought that their business conditions, these are questions, what do you think the world is going to look like 6 months from now? So in April, they thought things were going to get worse over the next 6 months. By May, they were about neutral, and by June, they were pretty positive. So we've clearly seen those expectations turn around. It'll be interesting to see what the July numbers look like when they're released, because there's some lag in this and what happened with sort of the second wave of the virus. But if you think now that maybe with the mask mandate and some other awareness initiatives, that maybe we've got this virus starting to decline, if not stabilize, in North Carolina, which means we can start to move forward on the economics front again.
Yeah, and talking about moving forward, Professor Walden of NC State also suggested that, you know, while the economy did bottom out earlier, he doesn't think the state economy will return to pre-virus levels until 2023. Does that sound like an accurate forecast to you?
That's a big debate right now. Some economists are calling for what's called a V-shape recovery, which means quick down, sharp up, you recover relatively quickly. I think I might be more in the camp with Walden of sort of what we're starting to call a checkmark recovery. So a really sharp contraction and then a quick bounce back, but not all the way back. And that last little bit takes quite a while. But this has been really, really unique from an economics perspective, because the patterns we usually see, we haven't observed this time. So you would expect that as people lose their jobs, that they're going to eat through their savings. And then as the economy recovers, they're going to have to rebuild their household balance sheets before they can start spending again. And that's sort of an impediment to reaching our potential output again. But in this recession, with the monster stimulus package that went through in, all right, so now I'm going to mix up my months. I think it was April, if I remember right. Consumer spending fell off a cliff, but personal income grew at a record pace, which means we ended up with personal savings setting a record. So savings rates in the U.S. tend to be somewhere around 7% or so. But that month, it was like 30%. Because income went up by 16%, or sorry, income went up by 20%, but spending went down by about 16%, and you end up with a 32% savings. It was really interesting to watch. And that was stimulus checks hitting, these unemployment benefits and top-ups, and then people not spending it. So there's reason to believe that there's sort of money sitting on the sidelines in some folks' bank accounts. And as we start to get past the health problem, we can resolve the economic problem.
And it's interesting, Megan Lewis of Cape Fear Collective, you talked about the public sector as being one of the stronger sectors, suffering perhaps less, Adam Jones, from the COVID shutdown. But is that a different issue right here in the Cape Fear region as opposed to most of the rest of the state, because New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender counties are so reliant on tourism and beach tourism for their government coffers?
Yeah, I would think that we still have yet to really see the effects of this downturn on the local government employment. So we've seen room occupancy tax drop off. We've seen sales taxes drop off. Sooner or later, that's going to filter through to some of their programs. Now, having said that, ironically, the chaotic state of politics in North Carolina might actually be helping us as a state and a region. And that's that since Raleigh had not passed the budget, they kept functioning off the budget from a couple years ago. But revenues had continued to grow over that time period. So we had a relatively large rainy day fund by accident as we came into this crisis. So that's put us in a better position than a lot of other states.
Yeah, and if I can just make one quick note on the public sector growth. So 54% said they were grow. This includes actually nonprofits in the education sector too for this survey.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about economic growth in the Cape Fear region, recovery during and after a pandemic. My guests today are UNCW regional economist Adam Jones and Megan Lewis of the Cape Fear Collective, and they're answering your questions during the live Wednesday discussion. Do you have concerns about the future of your job or your business? What are you doing about your own economic future? Email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, we're going to hear from some listeners. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The shutdown from the COVID-19 pandemic has hit the Cape Fear region hard, as it depends so heavily on the hospitality and tourism sectors. But with the explosive population growth, are there new opportunities to diversify the economy? We're exploring that question with Megan Lewis, Director of Programs at the data science nonprofit Cape Fear Collective, and Adam Jones, Regional Economist with UNCW's Cameron School of Business. And we want to hear from you. How has the shutdown affected your business or your job or how you think about your livelihood? Send us an email at coastline@whqr.org during this live Wednesday, August 12th discussion. And I want to get to an email from Edie. She writes, I'm wondering how the governor's order closing down bars for the past 5 months in Wilmington will affect the economic climate of New Hanover County, considering our restaurants and bars contribute $16 million a year in revenue to the ABC board. To date, she writes, restaurants are open. However, private bars have been shut down since March 17th with no relief. If the numerous small businesses like bars, skating rinks, arcades, and some gyms and entertainment venues are forced out of business, how will this affect our neighborhoods, our tourist industry, and especially our small businesses? Thanks for that question, Edie. And I think you've captured a lot of what so many people in this region are wondering. Adam Jones, what is the impact of some of these venues going out of business going to be to the region?
Oh, it's potentially tremendous. If you think about us relying on leisure and hospitality and tourism, and also a university to bring a lot of students in, I think if you start to step back and think about that as an ecosystem, it relies on all these other amenities, right? We have to have, if people are going to go to the beach, obviously you have to have a beach, but you want to have all the other supporting fun stuff to go with it. And that includes a vibrant downtown that includes your restaurants, that includes your bars. And if we see those disappear, then the attractiveness of the region for visitors declines. So it's potentially very negative. Now, the positive, I think, would be that the demand is likely still there for the most part. So even if some of these places do close, hopefully they'll be able to reinvent themselves, or somebody else will be able to come in and replace them. So if folks are coming to the beach, for example, the hotel is still there, right? And if people are in the hotel, they're going to need meals. So even if one restaurant closes, those folks are going to go look for food somewhere else, and maybe we'll see some of the other restaurants expand. But it's definitely going to change the face and culture of this if we don't get reopened relatively quickly.
Megan Lewis, one of the issues that we've talked about is diversifying the economy and making it less vulnerable. And this is a point that, Adam Jones, you've also raised frequently, which is, yes, we all know we rely a lot on the tourism and hospitality industries. But what are some of the sectors that we could focus a little bit more on, where there's potential that might help diversify and make us less vulnerable?
Absolutely. So, healthcare, expecting 64% of those that responded are expecting to grow. IT and software was up at 72%, and life sciences was up at 85%. So I think, a mix of these certificate programs, short-term degree programs, and certainly these four-year higher degree programs are needed in all of these industries to help diversify our industry sectors.
Tell us more about this job study, this regional skills analysis that Cape Fear Collective started working on right before the shutdown. what is the goal of this analysis?
Absolutely. So this is a survey that's actually seen, has added great value in the Triangle region and in Buncombe County and surrounding counties. And we essentially wanted to bring it here to help add a regional perspective to the statewide data that is already out there regarding the future of the labor market, and certainly the employer needs survey that's done by the Department of Commerce on specific jobs and then the skills and degrees that are needed for those positions. So that was the goal of the survey. And we thankfully, I think, got a great sample of data to really add to that statewide data to say, here are the growing degree fields in our region. And I think most importantly, during the pandemic, here are the skills that we can start infusing or support in our community so that our talent pipeline is prepared for these new jobs.
How do we support skills and development? What does that mean in specific terms?
Absolutely. So we're actually going to look to kind of convene some focus groups per industry sectors and bring together our workforce and education partners here. So we partnered with UNCW on this survey, Cape Fear Community College, the other surrounding community colleges, and the workforce development boards to say, here's a portion of the data that's needed, and how can we stand up programs that are going to support these needs? Or I think a large part of this is going to be building capacity in existing programs.
Adam Jones, you've also talked about the need for diversification in the economy and how, we're grateful that we have such a strong tourism and hospitality industry here because it has been the backbone of the economy. But what are some of the ways that we could lean into other sectors?
So that's a really big question. I'm not sure the answer is really clear, and it certainly has changed since we've gone through COVID. So coming out of the last recession, there was a lot of discussion about, communities that are reliant on construction are going to get hit, and communities that are reliant on, say, manufacturing are exposed to international shocks. Maybe we should try and build industries that look a little bit more inward. Well, this time around, that all got flipped on its head because construction is one of the industries that has actually held up a little bit better through this recession. So every one of them, every recession or downturn is going to be different. I think the key to building resiliency in the local economy is to diversify, understanding that we're going to eventually get hit by shocks. But at least if we're in several different industries, hopefully those others help carry us through. And to piggyback on a lot of what Megan's been talking about, thinking about how we get people in the region ready as well. So that means skills, but also helping them get their personal finances in order so that they're in a strong position to withstand a cut in pay or a loss of a job or a spouse that loses their job or something along those lines.
So you're saying that just personal financial literacy is actually an important part of the equation for a healthy economy?
Certainly. So if you're facing uncertainty in the future, then how do most of us react? We react by pulling back on our spending, which then becomes the self-fulfilling prophecy, right? We call it the paradox of thrift in economics. If people save, then we end up in the world that we were scared of. But if we take a little bit longer term view and we have our finances in order and we have an emergency fund, then looking at some of this uncertainty isn't so frightening. And we continue to enjoy ourselves, go out to eat, those kind of things. And maybe we do better in some of these downturns.
I want to go back to Edie's question about, you know, since bars have been shut down since March 17th and along with entertainment venues and some of these other things. And both of you have acknowledged that they're important to the local economy and that there will be some probably permanent loss. But when we say that, I'm aware of, I don't know Edie's specific role in that industry, but I do know people who own restaurants and are, you know, it's not just their livelihood, it's their form of creative expression. And it's their lives in kind of a profound way. It's an extension of themselves and their passions and their interests. Is there anything that you can say? Is there any strategy to employ that people like that, bar owners, restaurant owners, could really take and kind of at least get some hope from? Or are there strategies that they could take moving forward? And this is really for either of you.
All right, so I'll jump in because we're all staring at each other trying to figure out how do we solve the unsolvable problem. I'm an optimist by nature and intentionally. So I would like to think if there's anybody that's going to figure out the way out of this, it's those folks who are artistic and creative and can think about how to sort of remold their business, which we've heard a lot about that in the national media, but I think it's especially true here. And back to her earlier question about how does the region change coming out of this? Well, we have an opportunity to really examine the way places do business and think about if there are ways to get in the new areas of business. So the Swain Center here has been sort of zeroing in on three words. You know, these things always come in threes, right? But prepare, reshape, and create. And I think we're sort of in the reshaping piece of it right now, where we're just trying to figure out what do we do to safely get through this? But we're starting to approach the point where we should be thinking about creating. How do we take the lessons from this and carry those forward? So a lot of businesses have experimented with delivery. It may or may not have gone well this first time around, but at least they've learned something and gotten their feet wet with it. Same thing for carry out. So it's not a probably not a great answer, but I think ultimately that human capital will eventually benefit us and we'll be able to go through entertainment in a different way in the future.
People will always need to be entertained and eat and drink.
I think from a workforce perspective, along with Adam was saying, is some skill mapping. So that loss of workforce, I think there's a real opportunity to map those skills to some of these growing industries and to maybe slot those people into this 9,600 to 17,000 new jobs that are coming to the region just from those that were surveyed. So looking into some innovative programs on how to repurpose that talent in other industries.
And that may be part of the answer to Marjorie's question. She sent this to coastline@whqr.org. She asks, how will the school closures among most of our area schools this fall impact our local economy? Seems plausible, she says, that low-wage workers may be forced to leave the workforce because they can't afford childcare. If we have a shortage of lower-wage workers, doesn't that impact the ability of many sectors in our area to thrive? So I guess there are a few questions embedded in that idea. Megan, first of all, you talked about the remapping of skills. Repeat that term that you used and explain exactly what that means.
Absolutely. So there's a program out of the U.S. Chamber Foundation actually called Talent Pipeline Management. And so this takes a group of employers that are having similar hiring challenges. So it's actually more on the employer side, but I think there's an opportunity to flip that and put it on the employee side. And one of those strategies is really being very detailed about the skills and competencies that are needed for that job, and then really back mapping where those skills are acquired. And so doing that, again, maybe for the restaurant workforce, and then seeing where that there's commonalities. We're looking to hopefully launch a talent pipeline management collaborative, with the construction industry. And so finding those crossover points, and then again, getting that workforce skilled up to be able to succeed in those jobs.
And the construction industry has suffered less than some of these other sectors during the shutdown. How do you help develop a talent pool for the construction industry? And are there particular trades within that industry that are highly sought after, more sought after than others?
Absolutely. So utilizing Talent Pipeline Management as an example, bringing together a collaborative of construction employers. From the survey, we've seen that estimators are in high demand, HVAC, plumbing. And so picking a particular pain point and then running through what is the actual demand over the next 3 years. And where are you currently sourcing talent? We know Cape Fear Community College, Brunswick Community College, and others have these programs that are already servicing that industry, but really mapping out their capacity to make sure we have room here in our existing talent pipeline to fill those job needs.
And I want to ask you more generally about Cape Fear Collective. We understand it describes itself in part as a nonprofit, a data science nonprofit, a data collection hub. How does CFCC's data, how do you want that data to be used and potentially incorporated into local policy?
Absolutely. So we actually coin ourselves as kind of a backbone of backbone organizations. And so we are here to support existing nonprofits, the government sector, and really the public at large in providing real-time data that can help inform programs, interventions, and really with the overall picture of trying to move the needle on some of our region's top issues. So a small example.
What are those top issues?
Absolutely. So we actually just put out today a racial equity dashboard that examines, the racial barriers in housing, civic representation, public health, and also this historic narrative around monuments in our region. So looking at, say, housing, for example, how much people are spending on average, either renting or owning, and is that over the recommended threshold? What does zoning laws mean for the future of housing in our region? So looking at data, really the social deterrence of health, work, and education is where we're trying to start, and helping that inform, again, the nonprofit community and those that are on the front lines already doing this work, and how they're moving the needle.
And so are you saying that the issues that emerge when you examine racial equity or racial disparities, is that kind of the overarching mission, like exploring that behind Cape Fear Collective and why it formed?
So that was certainly the goal of the racial equity dashboard. We're also kind of simultaneously working on a broader community data platform. So utilizing data sharing agreements with some anchor institutions in town where you're already going to report this data publicly. How can we provide it here in real time for the public at large in New Hanover County and surrounding regions, again, in the health, education, and workforce space to start informing some of these programs and really getting down to, many people are doing great work in a lot of these different spaces. And so how can we better coordinate and support those efforts?
And so I want to go back to whether Cape Fear Collective has positions on issues, because you're saying that you're basically a data provider, and organizations and local governmental entities could tap you for data to help inform decision making, policy making. Why should people trust your data, especially if you have positions? And couldn't your data analysis or interpretation be skewed by already existing policy positions?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think we welcome the challenge. So Cape Fear Collective does not take positions on these issues. We're simply providing the data and really collecting it in a way that's already publicly available, but putting it in one spot. And I think we're encouraging people to draw their own insights from this data. So right now we have one data scientist on staff. We plan to grow that team so that we can have even more data available to people. But really the goal is put the publicly available data out there in a way that's user friendly and let people draw their own insights.
And so you are encouraging people to challenge, to draw their own conclusions, but also to challenge your data?
Sure, absolutely. And I think we're always looking for new partners that maybe have data that we haven't accessed yet and trying to figure out a way to bring that into the fold as well. I mean, one program we worked out in particular is trying to break down census tract responses as far as census completion rates and working with the county in that way.
You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of the likely future, the possible future of the Cape Fear region's economy with Cape Fear Collective's Megan Lewis and UNCW's Adam Jones. Tell us how you're thinking about your own livelihood. Has the pandemic caused you to think about your business or your job in a different way? What's changed for you? You can email us today at coastline@whqr.org during the live Wednesday edition. When we come back from this short break, you'll have one more segment to get your question or comment to us. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. COVID-19 shut down the economy in North Carolina this past spring. Now that some say we're through the worst of it, how long will it take to recover? And are there new ideas and strategies that could help diversify the regional economy, thus making it less vulnerable? We're exploring these ideas with Megan Lewis, Director of Programs at the data science nonprofit Cape Fear Collective, and Adam Jones, regional economist at the Cameron School of Business at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. And we're taking your questions and comments on this Wednesday, August 12th. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Adam Jones, after asking Megan about the Cape Fear Collective's policy positions, and if you're just joining us, she said they've committed to not taking positions, but providing data and encouraging people to challenge their data and challenge their analyses as well. You conducted a survey on economic ideology. Tell us about that and how it correlates with happiness.
So we're going to open this door.
You got two hours?
You got 2 hours?
Perhaps.
So it started out as a conversation. First, let me say I really support what Cape Fear Collective is doing. Put the data out there. Let people talk about it. Everybody has ideas and insights, and we need everybody playing in this game. So I think the more of that is going on, the better. Of course, I'm an academic, so that's naturally what we believe. So a group of us were sitting around who all have different views and positions, and we were arguing about different stuff. And we started thinking about economic ideology, so the way people sort of view the world and where they live, and whether or not that affects their happiness levels. So take, I don't know if you can call anybody that lives in the US a true socialist, right? But take somebody that's more on that end of the spectrum and put them in Texas. How happy are they? Is the free market set of policies in Texas going to make them less satisfied with their life? So we surveyed a little over 2,000 people, asked them questions about their own ideological positions, where they live, and borrowed heavily from the psychology literature to get a measure of their satisfaction with life. And we found that when you have a mismatch between people's personal views and the policies of the state that they live in, that they're less satisfied. So that probably isn't really surprising.
So you're saying a socialism leaning Texas resident is going to be angrier and less happy than that same person living in, say, California or New York?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That's you said it much, much better and cleaner than I could have.
Well, I don't know about with this survey. So did you find it went always, in other words, people who lean to more towards, and I feel a little funny actually using these terms, socialism and capitalism, because they're so broad. I mean, how do you even define that?
So, well, we spent hours and hours arguing about, should we call it left, right? There are a bunch of different dimensions. So we finally decided that we would try and use the simplest terms we could. So we called folks who are completely free market oriented capitalist, and those who believed in more regulation, we just called them less capitalist. And that's where we finally ended up falling on trying to figure out how to name these things that are so complex and are difficult to name with a single word. So yeah, if you have a less capitalist person living in Texas, they're going to be less satisfied. And if you have a more capitalist person living in New York, they're going to be less satisfied. But what's interesting is that the results were different across those two groups. So the capitalist that's in New York and is just paying higher taxes is going to be a little bit upset about that, but it's not going to have a huge effect on their satisfaction with life. Versus the less capitalist person that we think is looking for more of a social safety net and is living in a state that does not have that social safety net is significantly affected. It really matters to their satisfaction with life. And that then pulls on the psychology literature again, and this idea that a gain, you value a gain much less than a loss. So if I offered you $10, you'd smile. If I took $10 from you, you'd be really upset, right? So it's that downside risk that really affects people's satisfaction with life. So that has a couple implications that I think are really interesting for regional economics and regional policy. So that suggests, one, we want to make sure that we have a strong enough safety net that the folks who are concerned and anxious about it can be comfortable and get that enjoyment out of their life, even if there is potentially a tax to be paid to pay for it. The second implication is it suggests that there's a benefit to having policy done at a local level, so people can choose to some extent where they want to live and which set of policies they want to live under. Now, that's difficult to do because moving is really hard and expensive, and it's difficult to figure out what the policies are of the place you're going to live in. But to some extent, we already do that, right? If you're moving to Wilmington, you're going to ask questions about what are the schools like? What are the schools like in Brunswick County? What are they like in Pender County? And to the extent that we can offer people choices, that may let them match with their policies that they prefer.
Where does North Carolina fall in terms of economic ideology on the spectrum?
Kind of in the middle. It's really the extremes you've got, as you probably would think of if I just asked you to guess. You've got Texas on one extreme, and then you have California and New York on the other. North Carolina, somewhere in the middle.
That is a fascinating topic. And Adam Jones, we're going to have to pick your brain on a different show a lot more about that, really the implications of that and what you might do with it and what we would have learned. But did you collect the data before COVID or during COVID? And so, would that have any impact on the outcome?
We're going to find out. So for this study, we collected the data a few years ago. And then we recollected some data during COVID, interested on where did people spend their stimulus money, and thought, well, as long as we're doing a survey, let's ask the questions again to see if this sort of downside risk effect gets magnified during a pandemic or during a financial crisis. So we've got that data. We haven't analyzed it yet.
Okay, we're going to be eager to hear that. You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of the local economy and growth prospects amid and hopefully after the COVID-19 pandemic. With us today, Adam Jones, regional economist with the Cameron School of Business at UNCW, and Megan Lewis, director of programs for Cape Fear Collective. You can ask your own question or tell us about your pandemic experience on Wednesday, August 12th by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. And Laura writes, an interesting subject, so relevant to our situation, hers and her husband's. She says, I'm employed at a resort hotel here, my husband at a local brewery. During phase one, I was fortunate my employer found projects for those who didn't want to stay home. So I was able to continue working under strict guidelines, of course. Since phase two, we were able to open to guests with limited capacity and have been very busy. My husband, she says, is in management, so he also continued to work at reduced hours, helping with curbside pickup and takeout. His establishment has also been very busy since phase two. People were tired of sitting at home and came out full force when the restaurants, hotels reopened. Adam Jones, I see you nodding your head. Does that resonate with what you've been hearing?
That resonates with what I'm hearing, but I'm nodding my head because that resonates with me personally. As soon as the campgrounds in Western North Carolina reopened, we were headed to the mountains. Don't get me wrong, I love Wilmington, but I needed something else and just to be somewhere else for a while. And I think a lot of us are in that same spot. So yeah. I think there's pent up demand, and that will help with the recovery as we continue to get the health crisis under control and reopen.
And Jamie writes, bar owners and live music venues have been hamstrung for months without the benefits of partial reopening afforded to restaurants and breweries. As mentioned earlier, she says, we have a business ecosystem that is enriched with live music and wonderfully colorful bars. Is there a way to help these businesses that have been shut down by the order? This segment of the Cape Fear business community is integral to bringing tourism and the support of local artists. And Jamie really brings out that piece about how the creative expression of this community. So many people are drawn to the Cape Fear region because there's this really rich cultural landscape here. And this is part of it. So once again, what can we do to save, you know, this part of the economy that includes so many creative people and such rich artistry?
I wish I had an answer to that. I don't necessarily think I do, but I think it's even more pressing as that additional bump in the federal unemployment runs out. You know, as Adam said earlier, it was sustaining maybe those employees for some time, and we need to start thinking quickly, especially with phase two extended, about what's next for that workforce.
Yeah. You know, Adam, you've also talked about really getting clear on how we want to grow. And in doing that, it might mean that we need to forego some opportunities in favor of others, which could require some discipline when you're looking, you know, 5 or 10 years out. And you used an example of Amazon, for instance. Like, what if it chose Wilmington for its headquarters? It wouldn't have, and that wasn't on the table. But if it had, you've suggested that might not necessarily be a positive thing for the region. Explain why all business growth here is not the best thing.
Sure. So this is one that's sort of a hot potato that we just get to throw over to the elected officials and say, here, have fun with this. But it comes down to, what's the objective of economic development, right? We talk a lot in general terms about good jobs, but the local government, the local officials are elected by people that live in this region. Cape Fear Collective is trying to help people that are in this region. So if we bring in a company, and the example I use to just pick a crazy one is Amazon. If we bring in an Amazon, are they really going to hire a lot of people that live in this region, or are they going to hire in outsiders, bring them here, bid up the rents, bid up the cost of living, and potentially we hurt our residents in the region? And that's where it's really, really tough to make that match between the workforce that we have, the residents that we have, and the opportunities that are out there. And the more data we have around what our current workforce is like, what our current employers are looking for, where the gaps are, the better job we can do of trying to serve those that live here in southeastern North Carolina.
Megan Lewis, you know, looking at your jobs study, the data points are not of themselves funny, but there was one that did make me laugh out loud. And, you know, talking about what employers are looking for and what they have the hardest time finding. And correct me if I did not interpret this properly, but it looked like that when it comes to qualities or soft skills that are the hardest for employers to find in potential hires, topping the list, responsibility and self-discipline. It's not funny. Number two on the list, critical thinking. And number three, taking initiative. Is this a maturity problem here? Do we have a talent pool of psychological children? What does this mean?
Yeah.
And how do we change it?
I think it has a lot of implications. And some of the programs we're looking at, one in particular where we've partnered with New Hanover County Schools, is looking at how do you coach, even in the high school, if not earlier, this critical thinking, solving complex, novel problems. We know technology is going to affect a lot of these industries, but one thing we think is safe from technology is this working in diverse teams and solving these novel problems. So District C, Cape Fear, is just one way in which we're doing that. And, you know, every step of the education pipeline, these skills need to be ingrained. I know that UNCW and the community colleges are looking into that. And certainly we've seen New Hanover County Schools is as well.
So talk about some of the collaborations that you have going to help educate kids.
Absolutely. So District C Cape Fear in particular, we've coached upwards of 15 people in the community, educators, administrators, and community leaders alike, to coach this work, either within their organizations or back in their school buildings. And right now, Kevin Maurer on the Cape Fear Collective team and myself are coaching 14 New Hanover County high school students. They've been partnered with Live Oak Bank and Cape Fear Public Utility Authority and provided a real world problem that they have a week to solve. So that public pitch will be Friday. So we're looking forward to that.
Adam Jones, focusing on the next 5 to 10 years for this region, what is the best thing that local leaders and policymakers could keep in mind for planning and strategizing?
I'm going to echo what Megan said, and that's focusing on this critical thinking and taking initiative. And as technology continues to march forward, those who can think critically and engage with it will see a benefit to them. Those who can't, we'll see it compete with them.
Megan Lewis, where can people find information and the data that Cape Fear Collective is collecting?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking. CapeFearCollective.org. The full results and the final report of the Cape Fear Talent Survey are going to be revealed on September 1st. RTI International, who conducted the survey, will be doing that presentation. It's a free event to attend. Of course, it's virtual. So CapeFearCollective.org will house all that information.
Okay, great. Well, we'll look forward to hearing about all this as it unfolds. And that is this edition of Coastline. Megan Lewis of Cape Fear Collective, economist Adam Jones of UNCW's Cameron School of Business, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Coastline's producer is Rachel Keith. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.